Yeah, then you get shot and the internet can't help you.
All right, Mama's Project, welcome back to another episode. You know, I've just turned this camera on. I'm looking at myself. I feel a little bit insecure in this shirt. It's a bit small. What do you reckon?
I think it's the diet finally kicking in. I'm shrinking a bit.
Oh, yeah. No, okay, let's talk about that. So, I was told to weigh every day. I think Matt got you weighing every day.
Do you use the 10-day thing that gives you a 10-day chart on your weight?
Yes.
Averages your weight. Yeah. That's a really good Google sheet.
Yeah. So, I've got that Google sheet and I needed to get a scale to... a home scale. Because the scale at the gym, obviously, and you need to like weigh in every morning. I got like a piece of paper and a pen, so I'm just writing it. I just thought, you know, with all these sort of habits, you just need to make them as easy as possible, right? So, scale's in a position. It might seem like a small detail, but in order to make sure that you do this stuff continuously, is you need to make the barriers to entry so low. So, I actually had the scale kind of off to the side where I'd have to pull it out every morning.
Yeah.
And I literally thought to myself as I put it there, that me having to bend over and pull it out every morning... one day, I might just not feel like doing that. So, I had to position it in a kind of awkward position in the bathroom where I know I can just stand on it every morning. So, I've been standing on it, pen and paper right there. And so, you have to be completely naked and it's first thing in the morning, right? After you've emptied out whatever's inside your body, no water, nothing. And So, when I weighed in at the start of the challenge, I was like 96.5, but I was at the gym on a different scale. It was in shorts, no shirt, no shoes, that sort of stuff. But... you know, you'd had like a meal, you had water and stuff. And now when I'm weighing in under these circumstances, I'm like 92. It's like 4 kilos difference. Now, I've definitely lost some weight. I reckon I've probably lost maybe like half a kilo to a kilo, I was telling Matt. But still, it's like, it's depressing. Like when you've stripped back all the meals in the day and you don't have anything else to kind of add the kilos on, it's a mental struggle. It was a lot more difficult mentally than I thought it would be. I kind of just thought, okay, I'm going into this challenge. I know I'm going to lose some weight. I can do the diet. I know I can stick to these things. I've had harder diets before, like push through 10,000 calories and stuff. I know how to set myself up with good behaviors. And I'm like, cool, you just like don't buy these things at the supermarket anymore. And you just like don't go to the supermarket hungry. And, you know, you just keep your fridge stocked with this sort of stuff, you know, healthy snacks like apples and bananas and stuff. And, even though the diet's been a small change, it has been hard. Like, just mentally seeing the number go down, more difficult than I expected. But hey, I'm sticking to it. So, we'll just see where we end up.
Yeah, I found the 10-day, like the 10-day calculator that gives you the running average over the last 10 days. That was like a game changer for the weigh-ins. Because otherwise, you like see it every day and then it like changes your attitude every day. You're like, like the scale's gone up. I need to be like super strict today. Or then it like goes down heaps. Like, oh no, I'm going too fast. Like, I'm dieting too hard.
Right.
Whereas the 10-day average... it becomes like crazy consistent every day. Like
yeah,
you'll probably find it's like 92.1, 92.1, 92.2, 92.2.
Yeah.
Even though your weight every day is like 93, 91, 94, 91.
Yeah, I think the biggest difference is about 600 grams between the weigh-ins, but overall, the average, it's not much.
It's like almost
100
nothing.
Grams. Yeah. So it's like much more accurate. Yeah. But it's just like mentally, can you handle weighing yourself every day? And I can. But still, seeing that number so low, it's kind of depressing. But hey, it just is what it is. I went into this because I was speaking to Ev about it and she was like, you know, maybe you should just, you know, bulk back up again after this. Or she's like, you know, you're going to maintain it or what are you going to do? And I was like, this had nothing to do with about getting shredded necessarily. What this was for me, really, like the truth is I wanted to see if I could just go down. Like, how could I handle going down and just being in a deficit? I've never been in a deficit. Ever since I figured out weights, ever since I opened my first Flex magazine, I was like, cool, I just need to shovel food. Every single day, I'd wake up and I'd be like, today's about eating the maximum amount of food. Maybe every now and then, I was like, oh, I'll try some fasting or whatever. But at no point, I could not think of a single point where I was like, purposely for weeks on end, trying to eat less. Since in the last, 12, 13 years. Like, it's crazy. It's a big change.
It's a great existence.
Yeah. To eat in the surplus. Yeah.
That's where you want to live.
But look, I tell you what, the difference I think it's making now that I've... so, I played my first basketball game on the weekend, which, again, I tried to work that out. I reckon the last time I played five-a-side on an indoor court was when I was 14, maybe 15, which is year 7 or year 8 in school. No, I definitely played in year 7. I definitely played in year 8. I'm not sure if I played in year 9. That's when I wasn't sure. Yeah, so basketball, I played a lot in primary school when I was young and just the early part of high school. So it's been a long time. And so we've just gone into Division 1 in like just a local league. And I had no idea what I was doing. The pace of the game is really fast, right? So there's kind of this, I guess, assumption. So I joined a team of people that you just submit your name, like, hey, I don't have a team or whatever, but, you know, just put me in. So I just went in, like, not knowing any of my teammates or whatever. Fortunately, we're, like, the biggest team in the league in terms of height. But there's just a natural assumption, like, hey, we've all been playing basketball for a while. We know what to do. We know where to stand in offense. We know how to cut. We know how to drive. We know how to call plays and stuff. I don't know any of that stuff. I can just handle and shoot and stuff. And, it was embarrassing. They pulled me over. They were going, do you know what I mean when I say, you know, cut to the top or like stay on the corners? I was like, I have no idea what you're talking about. So they had to like walk the whole team during a time. I had to like walk me over to the court and they were like pointing the spot. So when the ball's here, you need to stand here. And when it moves this way, you need to move this way. So that was like a bit of a rude shock. But I'll tell you what, Sunday night, downloading all that data from playing a new sport, it was like the first time you try CrossFit. You can't stop thinking about it, right? It's nonstop. You're thinking about snatch technique. You're thinking about pulling the bar in. You're thinking about setting up deadlifts. You know when you're like starting to learn butterfly pull-ups and you can't stop thinking about, okay, where are my feet? How do my hips open? When do I pull in? Like that. But that was nonstop about basketball. Okay, where do I stand when I cut? I'm watching YouTube videos. I'm like, I'm doing this all over again just for a new sport. So I'm really, in that first fun phase, was really good. And Sean Diakov, friend of the show, scored 11 points. Dude, he had a mad game. Yeah.
Very impressive. He's living the real gym owner lifestyle.
Yeah. Yeah, he's playing golf, basketball, using his fitness for real stuff. But I was going to say, I was worried about my fitness going into his, primarily been doing bodybuilding and strength training. And the only running and fitness, well, the only fitness I would say I was doing is probably 11 reps and 1 minute rest. But running fitness, basically nothing. Basically nothing. Only when I sort of practice by myself. But even then, I'm not really like pushing myself that hard when I'm just kind of like shooting on a half court. And my whoop score was at like 96% going into the game. And I felt fine. I mean, it was hard. Yeah, there was moments where I was like, okay, sub me off. But I tell you what, having your whoop score at 96, and yesterday I trained weights and I think I was at about 51%. I gassed out hard during the weight session versus on the court. It makes a huge difference. And really the big difference I feel that a whoop score percentage says to me, and a lot of people have been saying, how do you get a higher whoop score? What are people messaging us in? And I said, the thing that I feel like I can do every day that impacts the score the most the next day is hydration. If I have a day where I literally forget to drink water and, you know, you're pissing golden in the afternoon, then my whoop score is definitely down the next day. But if I've remembered to drink water all day, my whoop score is always green the next day. Because I always take care of sleep. Sleep's always taken care of. Nutrition's generally pretty much the same. Training's pretty much the same. But the one thing that I can forget and not forget is hydration. I looked at some of the research on HRV, and I looked at how the whoop kind of tracks HRV, and it tracks it through hydration as well, which is kind of like to do with like skin conductivity and temperature. And yeah, man, being super hydrated all day from like the moment you wake up all the way through the afternoon, you're constantly just pissing. I wake up the next day and my recovery score is super high. So man, I think it made such a big difference.
It's a good question. I was thinking more it was training, but it could be a confounding factor because the days I train could be more dehydrated.
Yeah.
Because I was finding that was the biggest influence. Was like if I trained a lot, then it was just like worse the next day, regardless of the sleep situation.
Mm.
But it's very possible it could also just be hydration.
Because I think that is the one that varies the most. Because it's so easy to go 4 or 5 hours in your day and forget to drink any water. But you don't forget to sleep, right? It gets to sleep time. You're like, cool, now is like the time when I'm going to do that thing where I'm unconscious. But hydration is the one you can definitely forget. Not many people forget food. They're like, okay, I'm hungry. I need to eat now. But who are we talking about when it was... was it Dr. JB? Ages ago, maybe episode 90-something or 80-something?
Yeah.
Where he was talking about hydration and the longer you stay dehydrated, the more the signaling of you need to drink water is basically switched off.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that...
That's the most common thing you'll find. Is like, as soon as you help a client drink more water, they're like, oh, I'm more thirsty.
Yeah, that pathway involved in hydration, it's interesting because when you're like super hydrated and then you... just a little bit dehydrated, your body sends a really loud signal. But if you're really dehydrated and you become more dehydrated, like there's no signal.
Mute signal,
yeah. So it's interesting. To a marathon.
Mm.
You watched it. I didn't watch it.
It was my first marathon that I've watched. I'm going to say it's probably my last.
So hold on. Did Nike do it again? Was it a Nike event?
No. So this is like, I think it's like part of the conspiracy. the name of this company, it's like, I'll get it. Like no one's heard of it, but So the guy that owns the company...
Isn't it to do with bikes?
No. It's like a massive, like, evil pharmaceutical company, I think.
Okay.
But he's like the richest guy in the UK.
Okay.
The guy that put this on.
Is he white?
Yeah. And he like hugged... hugged Elliot there. No, it's not the Queen.
Oh, the Queen. Is the Queen that rich?
Yeah, she's loaded.
How, like... Yeah.
Not like, you know, private enterprise. I remember the Harry Potter girl, she became richer than the Queen. So, like, they're very wealthy, but it's not, like, out of control.
But the Queen's... The money from the monarch... It's the monarchy, right? Yeah. Their money is just old money, though, right? It's just stored in trust and shit. Are they generating new revenue? Like, how do they create more wealth?
Yeah, I think so, for sure. I mean, it's just, like, money creates money, right? So, they have people managing their money and doing the right thing with the money.
But they're not...
They're not collecting, like, all the tax revenue anymore. But I'm sure the government would still pay... Like, they would still get money for... It'd be so expensive upkeeping that Buckingham Palace.
You reckon the government gives them money?
Definitely still
like
tax
taxes,
money.
Yes, they get
definitely
tax money?
Still tax money going there.
Yeah.
100. The company is Ineos.
But they don't sell, like, I don't know, online programming or something. They don't have a store where you can buy merch.
They would sell the shit out of it if, like...
if they had merch.
If, like, Meghan Markle or whatever was selling, like, a Get Fit for Pregnancy program, she would... It'd be insane.
Is she pregnant right now?
She was pregnant.
Right, right.
It would be like, or like Get Fit after pregnancy.
Yeah, yeah.
Be out of control.
She hasn't. That's the thing. They don't need to capitalize on it, right? They have so much money.
I think she had to delete her social media to become like royal.
Right.
Yeah. So like they cut down.
So none of them have social media.
I don't know exactly, but I know she had to get rid of, like, she had to go off her social media and stuff to become royal. Yeah, I think they don't.
Yeah.
Right. But I think, like, you know, profiting just off like your fame of being a monarchy is like looked down upon. Like,
right.
The Queen's
just
like pumping online programs.
That makes sense. Yeah. It's like, why are you really trying to be in this fam?
So, Elliot, I did watch the marathon. I really do honestly think the biggest record was the amount of people watching it who are never going to watch marathons again. Because it's crazy.
How many people they turned off the sport of marathons?
It was impressive, but it was the same thing. Like, he was just running from the very start. And the only thing that changed is he nearly tripped once.
Or nearly tripped.
Oh, so, you know how they have the scariest thing in this whole thing is, like, the people have to... The paces have to change in and out.
Okay,
right?
So are they windbreakers or are they paces?
Both.
Okay.
So there's basically five people in front of him in like a V formation.
To break the wind.
And then there's two people behind him who I believe are kind of just like stopping him from falling too far back. So if he starts to pull like a little bit too far
they're
away
just,
from
like,
the front, they're kind of like,
bit.
You know, like just right there to be like, okay, go
forward.
It's just
an invisible rope that they're just pulling him along with.
And it's like quite complicated. So there was like green lines on the ground.
They're using the same Formula One track that they ran the first time.
No.
Different track.
A regular marathon track in Vienna.
Vienna.
It was on the road.
Sea level?
Yeah, apparently the conditions were perfect. So it was like 6 a.m. in the morning, absolutely no wind. Like the leads weren't moving.
Great temperature.
Very cold, which is like perfect for a marathon.
Very cold is perfect for a marathon.
Not freezing, but I think it was like 6-7 degrees when
it started.
Is
that because it keeps you cool during
the
race?
Yeah, you can't, like the biggest thing, you can't overheat.
Yeah.
No one's really freezing when it's like 8 degrees running a marathon.
Yeah.
So like everything was perfect. It does have corners, and he was like losing time a tiny bit every time he had to go around a corner.
Yeah, because that's what they tried to eliminate on the first one when we watched it. Breaking two.
No corners.
Yeah. But or like long sloping corners that didn't make a difference.
But like it was all flat. Obviously, there's no like crazy hills, no stairs.
It broke it with stairs.
So, but it was like so complex. So
no
like
escalators.
You have the V and then the two, like they would, every like 25 minutes, they'd do a change because obviously no one can pace in the whole time. Otherwise, they'd
not crazy.
They would set it themselves. And like every time they pace in, they're like, oh, this guy, Olympian. There's one Aussie.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, there's one big white Aussie guy. And then the four people would move out and the captain who was right in front of Elliot, who Elliot would just follow the entire time.
Right.
He would stay. And then after everyone had changed, then the captain would go out and the next person came in.
The captain. Okay.
But
or
once...
the head of the V.
Yeah, the head of the V. Once, when they were doing the changeover, one of the guys nearly tripped Elliot and he like stumbled.
Dude.
And it is crazy because he's basically was 9 seconds ahead to 11 seconds ahead the whole time.
Okay.
Just like crazy consistent. Like every kilometer was within 1 second of the previous kilometer.
Mm-hmm.
And like if he fell, I presume it's over.
Dude, 9 seconds on the ground. That's it. Yeah, it's gone. Yeah.
Would have been a very good YouTube story if he'd got up and kept going. It was crazy. And it looks like he nasal breathed the whole time. Like his mouth is closed and he almost doesn't change his face once
during
the whole match. He gave like these two little smiles near the end. Obviously, last like a few hundred meters, he like kind of carried on.
I saw
on
that,
himself.
Yeah.
And somehow picked up 10 seconds so fast. The battle was good. The craziest thing is like when he finishes and he starts celebrating, I reckon he's still running at like a 4 minute, 3 minute, 30 pace. Like he's running around high-fiving people so fast.
Yeah, yeah.
Like he's got...
Sprinting.
He doesn't... Doesn't run slow.
So, I thought about this because I knew we'd talk about this. Do you think he's taking anabolics?
Okay, so this is part of the controversy. So, his coach is like this head of this Nike coach and has just recently been caught Alberto Salazar is the name.
Mm-hmm. Sounds sus.
Running a large and extensive doping program. It's a Nike coach.
Well, he's like the head trainer for Nike or something.
And there's like no evidence linking him to Kijobi, except the fact that Kijobi's like the fastest guy in the whole world.
Yeah, and
that helps that.
Yeah, of course.
That was like the small bit of evidence. So there's that, which is like part of the controversy. I don't know if you saw the thing about the shoe.
All right, tell me about the shoe.
So basically...
Nike?
Yeah, so obviously it's Nike again. But basically, at the start of a marathon, everyone's like wearing their sponsored shoes, right? Lots of Nike, lots of other brands.
Asics and shit.
They bring out this shoe. They say it makes you go 4% faster. It's got like carbon fiber in it and these chambers. All of a sudden, like next marathon, everybody's wearing Nike.
Okay.
Nearly the whole field, despite having like different sponsorships.
Okay, this is before this race.
Yeah, before this race. All of a sudden, like people that are sponsored with like millions of dollars to other companies are still wearing the Nike shoes.
Oh, even though they might be contracted to Asics. So like, they're breaking contracts.
Like everybody's wearing the shoe.
Right.
Because apparently you actually do go faster.
It's that crazy. Yeah.
And they were all wearing the shoe and like he went way better than last time.
Yeah.
And now people are like, oh, like, is the shoe legal and all that type of stuff?
It's like that. It's crazy, like, advance in technology.
So there were a number. Yeah. And then also, it's like, I think one of the biggest parts of this was, like, everyone was going crazy. They're like, you know, first there was Bannister, and then there was, like, the man on the moon, and now there's this. No, I'm not dead serious. That's exactly how they were saying it. But I think the undertone of this is a little bit like Ineos, the company is like a $12 billion company, and Nike.
It's a pharmaceutical company.
Yeah. Like, they are very keen to profit off the event.
Of course.
It does seem like
business.
The person breaking the 2-hour marathon, that was like not going to happen for maybe like 20, 30 years. Like Elliot's like, I think it's like a minute away. A minute in a real marathon.
Okay, in a minute. Yeah, he's
got the world record. Like he's obviously the best. But it wasn't going to happen yet. But they were like, hey, how can we bring this massive event and make sure our sponsors are on the front of this and bring it like this year?
Mm.
So we make the money off it this year. And like that's what they did. But it's like, I think a lot of people, and particularly for me, I was like, we didn't actually break it.
What do you mean?
Well, he broke it under these like special conditions of like having people running in front of him, and like it's hard to know how much that actually helps.
I'm sure it makes all the difference
because nobody else gets to do that.
Yeah,
like if you're like, is Elliot the best in marathons? The way you know he's the best is because in a normal marathon he wins and he's got the best time ever.
Yeah.
It's not 2 hours, but it's the best time ever.
Yeah,
but like, could other people break this marathon under 2 hours with like people running in front of them? Like, you don't know.
Maybe in the future, but I would say not right now.
Probably not, but
maybe he's the best right now.
He's the best, but like he seemed to do it with a little bit of ease at the end. He was like celebrating. He went 20 seconds under.
Mm.
You just don't know because other people don't do it. Whereas like Roger Bannister, everyone was like, can he break it? He turned up and he broke it.
Yeah.
I think Usain Bolt, like they don't even mention him. Like he's more impressive. Probably juicing, doesn't even matter because he turned up at a race where like everybody has been trying to break the 100-meter record for so long and took tenths of a second off instead of hundredths of a second.
Yeah.
Which is insane.
Right.
Whereas, like, when somebody like Gallen broke the 100-meter record, but he had too much of a wind behind him, like, over the legal limit, no one cared. Everyone was like, oh, it doesn't matter. He had too much wind behind him.
Mm.
This was like fake wind.
Yeah. It's tough. I think anytime you do something crazy like this, there's always going to be criticism, right? Mm. Anytime they fucking landed on the moon and people said it was in a Hollywood set, you know? So that's still
a possibility.
Yeah. Well, depending on what you believe. I just think that the fact that someone did it is pretty nuts. And I think that allows the gateway to be open, to be like, okay, we know in crazy circumstances, a human can push themselves to get that done, right? Could be once in a lifetime, maybe, like, we don't know yet. But I think that anytime one person breaks through what people think is impossible, then the whole field lifts. And like the belief of what can happen, it just lifts naturally.
I hope so.
So, yeah, I mean, we'll see. It's hard to know. I think regardless, like what he did is like, he's special. Like you watch Breaking 2, he's special. Like there's no taking away from the fact that he's the best marathon runner of all time.
And the way they do like the nutrition and stuff is just like, you've never seen intra nutrition like this. Like there's like a guy on a bike right next to him the whole time, like with a computer open. And he's like looking at the computer while he's like literally riding and typing on the computer.
Riding what? A motorbike?
No, like a regular bike. Very impressive, actually.
Wait, hold on. One guy's riding a bike with a laptop at the
same time. Yeah, with a laptop attached to the front of his bike and a phone attached. And I think he's like downloading all the data about like his, you know, vital signals and all that type of stuff.
Right.
And then like at the perfect moment, they're like handing the bottle with like the ultimate intra nutrition. And he like has this like tiny squirt. He's like, it's crazy. Like it's because he cannot lose like a second.
Yeah.
But like the nutrition has to be like at the perfect moment.
But he would never hydrate like that in a normal marathon, right?
like you just grab, I think you just grab a bottle and you squirt it in your mouth. Yeah.
No, but they don't have cyclists that ride next to them.
No. It's a special occasion. Yeah. Like, there's no one else was racing in the race.
But then did you see right after someone posted some woman broke the world record in the marathon? Exactly what I was saying, right? It lifts the field. A woman broke the world record in, she got like 2 hours, 1 minute, 10 seconds or something.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
On the same,
a woman.
Same day?
On a different marathon.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, different marathon. Without any of that stuff. That's so fast. That's a minute off without all that shit.
Yeah.
So I feel like it's getting there. It's getting close. All right, we should jump into some listener questions. We've only got two this week, but two very long answers. I believe we're going to get stuck into this one. So we'll do one of the shorter ones first. Oh, actually, I forgot. I wanted to tell you with the pilot situation. So I spoke to one of my coaches because his hair's thinning a little bit, and no guy likes his hair thinning, right? So I said to him, you should consider this company pilot, blah, blah, blah. It's worth checking out the medications and that sort of thing. And anyway, so he went through it, did the consult, did everything, answer all the questions, used the code, that sort of thing. And he said it was just like the smoothest process possible. So he's just waiting to hear back from his doctor. But, from going onto the website to just kind of saying, hey, I'm here for hair loss and this is some of the symptoms and blah, 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 and his age and all that sort of stuff. It's really easy. He filled it out super quick on his phone. Didn't even need a laptop. And it's just waiting for the reply back. Well, the doctor got back to him and now he's just doing a little bit of back and forth before he gets sent the medication.
And the thing they taught us about that is just, you're so much better off going through a real doctor for hair loss medication than just going to a private company that's running ads on TV.
Yeah.
Because you end up getting sometimes something pretty similar, but you get it at a way, way better price and you get the more appropriate thing for you.
You know, it's funny, have you noticed that? Like, I think, I'm pretty sure the research is there, or maybe it's just anecdotal stuff, but people talk about it all the time is how men with really high testosterone lose their hair a lot earlier.
Faster, yeah.
And a lot of those companies, like Eastern European countries, Arabic countries, that sort of thing, because they're all like the strongest dudes ever, right? Yeah. In the weightlifting and everything.
Bald
at 12. And none of them have hair. Yeah. What about Ilya Ilin? I know it's juice to the gills, but that dude has like no hair, right? And it just makes you think, like, all the country, all the people like us, like, super weak genetics, they we got all our hair. But then it's funny because they get super strong and we're like, I wish we were as strong as you. And they're like, I just wish we had your hair. So it's good they have companies like Pilot. We just need the testosterone version of Pilot to keep up.
Even up.
Even out the playing
field. Have your hair but skinny? Try this.
Anyway, like I said, guys, all the stuff we talk about, it's always in the description. But if you just feel like going on it now, pilot.com.au. You can look into the hair loss treatment program, and Mind Muscle saves you 25% on your consult.
Yes.
Cool. Okay, so first question, this one is about the Whoop. So we did engage Whoop about it. And actually, I've had this conversation a few times with people, but basically, Chris37James, he asks, hey guys, wondering what you think of the accuracy of the calories expended by the Whoop band versus a macro calculator by Beyond Macros. On a training day, my Whoop gives me a calorie value at about 1,000 calories higher than my calculations from the macro calculator, which I find suspicious. Actually, that's interesting because a lot of people say undershoots.
Yeah.
And he's saying it overshoots by 1,000. Okay, I'm going to pull up my app and I'm going to tell you what my average is from... Now, I did use this with some other Whoop users the other day and they didn't know how to do this. So, if you do have the app, basically what you can do is you can go to... you can go to like strain, recovery, sleep, whatever it is. And if you swipe up, then you can go to like the previous 7 days of data. And it's actually really interesting. So my average calories expended over the last 7 days is 3,395. There's some missing data in there because I played a full game of basketball without the Whoop on because I need to get the arm strap for it. Otherwise,
what's the point of playing without it on?
Yeah, well, just put on my ankle. but the 3,395, I would say that's fairly accurate. So I was maintaining at about 3,600 calories of food. But remember, give or take food, it's always going to be off on the MyFitnessPal by somewhere between 15 to 20%. And that is enough wiggle room to say. So initially, I thought, I think this is off by like 500 calories. I think it's under by 500 calories, the Whoop. But now I'm thinking it's actually pretty accurate.
Mm.
I feel like it is really accurate. Like on Saturday, I did a lot of walking on Saturday. I trained at the gym, did a small session, but expenditure was 4,352. Yesterday, I sat on my ass all day, just worked nonstop. And then my expenditure was only 1,700.
Yep.
Expenditure was 3,000. So I think it's pretty accurate.
Yeah, I feel like this stuff. I mean, if you're looking for how many calories you've burnt to dictate how much you're going to eat, it doesn't work like that.
No.
So if you're trying to use it that way, like, just don't bother.
Mm.
Don't look at it and be like, okay, that's how much I'm going to eat that day.
Why do you think that?
Because that's just not exactly how it works. If you have like a massive day of training, like you're obviously going to go way, way up, right?
Mm.
But then the research will show that, like, you know, you burn way less calories just at rest later in the day. Your body will tone things down, and that's not yet going to be picked up by a Whoop. So your body will compensate for like the large expenditure of exercise you've done in your rest times by lowering your non-exercise related activity so that it tends to balance out quite well. You're far more consistent just like, you know, getting on a good program with your macros, tracking it consistently over time and going up and down based on like if you're gaining weight or losing weight, right? Trying to like every single day match it to your training or like how many calories you burn, it's just like...
It's too micro.
It's not actually going to play. And it's just not necessary. And you're going to do your head in, you're not going to be able to prepare all your meals, everything like that. So like, I think if you're using it for that, I just wouldn't bother.
Well, I did take an average, right?
So and that would be more the way, right? Yeah. Rather than like on a day-to-day basis, try to match it. It's just not necessary.
Yeah.
But the way I found it more useful is say... with a client, we were just like, hey, we need to just bring up your average level activity. So we just said like more like, okay, what like what was your average number of calories burned per day the last week? Cool, with like extra walking, some extra cardio, let's just like slowly start to ramp that up. And that has been like pretty useful to just like set some goals around general activity in that way. But I'm not like changing his eating on a day-to-day basis based off what he's burning.
Yeah, that's why I like the seven-day average because like we're talking about with the weight weighing in, the more data you collect, the more accurate it is. So if I go through and even if I'm looking at my 7-day average and then I look at the next 7-day average and then the next 7-day average and the next 7-day average, it's like it's you see much more consistent. Yeah. And I'm like, okay, I pretty much burned somewhere between 3,300 to 3,500 calories per day over an average of, you know, a month. So if you set a macro goal, if you set a nutrition plan based off that for maintenance, weight gain or loss, it's super accurate. I feel like it's very accurate, yeah. And then, yeah, the fluctuations that you have day to day, just in normal life, they're accounted for because you're doing it over a long period of time. So I actually don't think it's off. I think maybe the other calculator that you're using is not as accurate. But something like Whoop, that's way better technology than an Excel sheet that's got a questionnaire with maybe like 10 questions, right? This thing is monitoring you 24/7. It's doing skin conductivity, it's doing temperature, it's doing hydration. It's doing activity, it's taking heart rate, it's doing everything. It's like...
It's more accurate than the assault bike calories.
Way more. Yeah, doing assault bike calories and like rowing calories and stuff is not a good way to just kind of add it up. Because all those things measure calories different.
Yeah.
Yeah. Some going off one thing like this, I think is much better. Cool. So next question we've got, and I think we're going to go pretty deep on this one. As we wrap on it, we do have a movie review for you guys you want to stick around for. Sean Clarence. Good friend of the show. He asks, listen to the question, how do you define fitness? So much in the Instagram fitness world is about being super lean or super strong. Surely there is more to fitness. Well, first off, I'll just start by saying that maybe, Sean, you're a little bit too wrapped up in Instagram. I think if you're starting to lose perspective on everything and what you feel like is fitness and health, then yeah, Instagram can just kind of sway you like too many different ways and you can get lost. So sometimes it may just be, okay, I need to just unplug from the whole Instagram world and then just leave it for a month and just kind of see how you feel about it. And maybe this won't be such a important question to you. But if that's not the case and you want to just ask, okay, what is fitness to you? How would you define it?
Yeah, well, I basically have this question nearly every day because I find like, so we obviously run gyms. Everybody inquires for the gym. The first thing I'm like, oh, what are you after? They're like, oh, I want to get fitter. Mm. Like every single day, I'm like, cool, what does that mean to you? And you get like wildly different answers
right.
to every single person. So I do feel like this is the question that nearly everybody like starts to grapple with when they get into it. They're like, oh, I really want to get fitter. And then they start having to think about what that actually means to them.
Mm.
So it is super different. I would say that it's changed a lot over time depending on what I'm doing. Like when you're competing in a sport, it's generally just like, being better at the sport. Like that's your test of fitness that you have every week. And I think when you don't play a sport, it's harder. And that's when you've got to have like a deeper think about it. I think that where I'm at now, it's much more that you just don't want to be limited. But like Eli Kachabi, no human is limited. But he's definitely not limited at running.
No.
but it's much more being limited. Like, the more things that you just can't jump in and do, that's when I feel like your fitness is like lacking in some sort of way. So if you're with people that are like, oh, we're going to go on this run, or we're going to play, like, go for this, or we're going to hit like this weight session, or we're going to do this. And the more you're like, oh, I can't keep up with those people.
Mm.
That's where I feel like, oh, like, that's where my fitness is really let down.
Right.
So expanding that circle of fitness to me is the ultimate way of improving your fitness. So yeah, it's got nothing to do with how you look, but in general, when you take care of them, like, you look pretty good because it's super well-rounded. But just expanding that circle of things that at any second you could jump in and do quite well in. There's not like specifically very skill-based, like playing ping pong or something. That to me is like expanding your, it's like sphere of influence, but sphere of fitness.
Yeah, that's good. No, that's a good point. Yeah, I had a good think about this question because I think it's, there are obviously so many layers to it. Exactly what you talked about, it's wanting to have all these capabilities. But I think part of fitness as well, obviously, it's very personalized. It's a very individualized journey. So everyone's definition of fitness is going to be their own. And I don't think there's anything wrong with anyone's personal definition of fitness. But I think there are some definitions that are better than others. So for some people, defining fitness is, you know, how much they can pull on a deadlift. But like you said, if that subjects them to not, because if they're too specific, now they're not, they don't have the ability to do X, whatever it is, go out for a run, play sport or whatever. In my view, they're limited, but maybe for them, what's important to them right now is being able to pull this much weight. But I think I had a good think about this. I think CrossFit had it really right. I don't think they were very wrong. Their, fitness in 100 words or less, which, or fitness in 100 words, which was like, regularly learn and play new sports, like do gymnastics, lift, like do Olympic lifting, run a marathon, like run 5 miles or whatever it is, like all these standards that they set. Now, I know things obviously got clouded over the years, but I think where it started in the right place. It started with, let's try and be good at as many things as possible. Because the problem is, even if you don't want to do those things, so maybe you're like, well, I don't really care about sport because I'm not a sporting person and I'm not interested in sport. That's fine. But it's the option that if you had to, could you?
Yes.
Like if you have kids in the future, right? Or if you have kids right now and they're like, Dad, you know, let's go out and shoot hoops or let's go and kick a ball. But you can't. I feel like that's where you're limited. Now, even if that's not a thing for you, even if you're like, okay, I'm still not going to go do that. I'm not going to have kids or whatever. Then I think that you set yourself up for an injury. Like how many people that are so specific with what they do and then they go and try and do something that they're not capable of, which could be like, maybe they have no thoracic extension or rotation, and then they're reaching behind in a car to like pick something out of their bag while they're stopped at a traffic light, and they like pull their back. How often do we have clients that come in that say they've done something like that? And I just say, okay, well now you're a bit more precious. Mm. Yeah, maybe you can pull 600 pounds, but you can't rotate and extend properly. You're setting yourself up for a serious injury. And then how fit are you going to feel when you can't rotate and talk properly and move around in the world because you've injured yourself doing something pretty nominal? Because you neglected it.
Well, it's kind of like, you know, when we were getting to CrossFit pretty hard, like my knees were too sore to go upstairs, but I could still hit like a really heavy squat snatch workout.
That's true. It's
sad. And that's really what, that is a bit what happens when you specialize a lot.
Yeah.
It's like you just, you know, become unbelievably specialized just at the exact thing you're doing. Like people forget how much like the said principle actually works.
Mm.
You know, if you just train back squats, you get crazy, crazy good at back squats, but you can just change even just the squat a little bit and like you're not that good anymore.
Mm.
It's like a different type of squat, let alone even just like a sport.
Mm.
Like you get ridiculously specific at the thing you're doing. So when your fitness is, well, the type of training you do for fitness is specific, you forget how limited you're becoming in your fitness.
Specific adaptations to impose demands, said. Yeah, I just want to let people know what you meant when you said that. And then the other way I'm looking at it as well is like from a nutrition perspective, right? Because you can't have fitness and have a terrible diet, in my opinion. You have to have, you know, have to have good nutrition to go along with it. And hey, I think, look, 5 years ago when you asked me, I would have just said, you know, eat whatever you want as long as you have the energy and the calories and the protein to fuel your workouts, then you could do that. But man, as you get older, you know, things don't always turn out the way you want them to turn out if you go and use shit principles like that. So, you know, the longer you do it, the more you realize how important everything is that goes into it. It's not just the training. And one of the things that I've really come around to is with this, especially being in this deficit now, and, you know, some of the reasons I talked about going into this cut was also because having these habits where you can just eat whatever you want and as much as you want, they're kind of bad habits because at some point I'm not going to be moving as much as I'm moving. My metabolism's not going to be as fast. If I have these really bad ingrained habits of always going for extra snacks and always going for an extra 500 to 800 calories a day I don't need, then I'm going to end up in this point where that's going to become a detriment to me. So rather than be something good for me, it's going to now be a negative. And so learning how to control some of those habits, I think, is really important. And knowing you can control some of those habits. So that was one of the things I thought about as well, which is an essential piece to health. And I see it with some of our older clients that are in their late 30s and 40s, is that now they have these habits, which, look, in their 20s, it would have been fine. It wouldn't have caused them an issue, you know, extra 3 or 4 beers on the weekend. You know, maybe in the mornings they don't eat food or whatever. They just drink black coffee. But now compound 10, 15 years of this sort of practice on top of your body, you start getting gut issues because you're just pouring like acidic black coffee into an empty stomach every morning. You're not getting enough calories in the day. You're getting massive adrenaline dump from all the coffee in the morning and then a crash in the middle of the day. And that's just not good for your cardiovascular health. Like, your heart is super strained in the morning. So there are all these inherent issues that start to build up, which just aren't problems when you're younger, when your body can handle them. So I think it's about setting a really good foundation when you're early. And so for me, like, taking the nutrition side of things is, yeah, I think that, yeah, you definitely got to enjoy yourself. Look, restricting myself, haven't been restricting myself that hard now, but I know as I get deeper into the cut, it'll then go from, okay, like this healthy level of watching what you're eating and trying to maintain a good body composition, but still being able to enjoy social settings, which is an essential part of health, right? Still being able to be out with friends and not have to stress about what you're eating. You know, maybe you're not going to get the ice cream and the dessert and stuff, and you're not going to drink the 7 beers, but, you know, you're going to still have a good time and not have to worry and not be weird and antisocial. To, okay, later weeks of the cut, now this is really extreme. Now you're like, it's kind of like starvation. You're getting super lean, and that's where you see problems. It's all the extreme, right? Mm. It's being too specific, and it's being too extreme. And if you fall in the middle, and you kind of work the edges of the middle, I think, to whatever your goal is, I think that's like the healthy balance. But people just don't see that when they're just in it, right? So that's sort of the problem. And Instagram's a fucked up place, yeah, for the fitness industry, because the extremes are glorified.
Yep.
I guarantee you right now, you take those people, and we've met them, right? People that look the best on Instagram, they have the most insecurities, right? They're insecure about the way they look. To you, they look like a goddess or a god, right? They're jacked, they're shredded. And you ask them like, oh, I'm fat, or I'm restricting all the time, or I'm unhappy, or they're on their phone constantly looking for their approval. And yeah, it's like, honestly, it's sad. Yeah, it's sad. So Sean, you're fine. Don't stress too much about it. Cool. Movie this week. Explained.
Yes.
Explained have changed their format. So now, rather than releasing a whole season at once, they're now doing a weekly release. Okay, tell me, next week or this week sometime, they're releasing the next episode. I don't know if you saw it. It's called Athleisure. What do you think that is?
Did you see it?
Do you think that is the rise of like Lululemon and like activewear?
Probably.
Athleisure.
Yeah. Leisure. Yeah.
What's
is that how it's spelled?
Yeah, athleisure, you agree? Yeah.
Yeah. Athleisure wear seems actually a very big thing.
No, it doesn't say athleisure wear. It says athleisure. That's just the next thing. So I think it's just going to be the rise of like, okay, people wearing tights in public.
Yeah.
Maybe that'll be an interesting episode. I'm looking forward to
that. A trend in fashion in which clothing is designed for workouts and other activities, except worn in other settings such as workplace, school, or casual or social occasions.
Maybe our Europeans can tell us, but I've heard that going out in public in athleisure wear in Europe is like really frowned upon.
Yeah, in France, I heard it's like, it's
yeah, not a like thing. if you're leaving the gym in what you went to in your workout clothes, like you better put on a pair of jeans and like a shirt because people
like,
get
it's
upset.
Like, it's like going
it's like offensive.
It's like going to a restaurant and in your pajamas, like just full pajamas. Though.
It's offensive. I don't know, mate, our European listeners. Can you message us in on the Instagram and just let us know if that's really a thing? But look, anyway, explained. So we watched 2 episodes. We watched Billionaires, and we watched Animal Intelligence. What do you want to start with?
Probably Billionaires.
Okay.
So we've reviewed some of these before. They've had some really good ones. Explain. Like we did they had like a health one actually, which we reviewed a while ago that I thought was like pretty good.
Which one?
Was one? And even Dim McKillop thought was good. It was about like why people get fat.
Oh, your diets.
Yeah. Why diets don't work.
Yeah.
Which was good.
They had a good one on monogamy.
Yeah.
That was a good one.
There's been quite a few. There's been some really good ones. But these ones, yeah, they've changed the format. They're like releasing one every week. So I guess you just get addicted. I don't know. It's probably every time I go on Netflix, there's some other thing to keep me there longer.
Dude, it's so good.
Every single time.
It's so good. I love learning on Netflix.
Supremely effective.
Yeah.
So the one on billionaires is great. So it basically just follows like, it's like, hey, what's the difference between billionaires and the average person? Hint, it's like they got way more money than you. And then...
really?
And then it goes into like all-time billionaires and new time billionaires, and then the effect I think billionaires have on society.
Yeah.
And I was like, man, they They're really well done, the explain videos, yeah, I've got to say.
And you know what was interesting for me? Well, first of all, how funny was it when Mark Cuban was being interviewed? They're like, what's the bad thing about being a billionaire? He's like, nothing.
Yeah.
Nothing is bad about being a billionaire. And he's probably right. But the segregation between billionaires themselves. So, in the how many are there in the world? Like 2,500 or something? So, amongst that group, there's like, I don't know, was it like 70% of them are under like...
$10 billion or less.
Yeah. And then there's like...
The regulars.
Then there's like the next majority, I don't
10
know.
10 to 30. Yeah.
Yeah. Is And then there's like, how many? Like 10 people that
the
are...
mega.
Yeah. That are like 100 billion plus, which is just crazy. So, even between them, there's still like... The wealth gap.
It's like the
know?
Same thing, yeah.
Yeah, it's, like, it's the same percentages.
The inequality. Like, this is an outrage.
Yeah, well, they were saying, he's like, fuck, I've got all this money. Like, one of the billionaires being interviewed, maybe it was Mark.
Yeah, it was
he's
Mark
like,
Cuban,
and he's like, I'm looking at this guy going, man, he's just got way more money than me. And then you think, and then he's thinking to himself, oh, wait, shut up. What are you talking about? It's crazy. It's crazy that at that level, even they think, fuck, I don't have that much money compared to this guy. It's just it's the hedonic treadmill, right?
Yeah.
Of all humans. You just get... continuously come back to baseline of getting used to whatever circumstance you're under. And I'm sure Bezos, with 175 million or whatever, billion, he's probably thinking to himself, he's kind of hit that hedonic treadmill. He goes, cool, I'm the richest man in the world, but I'm still a human. So well, I have to like work out and shit.
Exactly. What I thought was so good was like they were describing the differences in like purchases. So it was like for a billionaire to get like a private jet on their trip, it's like the similar to you to like getting an Uber ride.
Yeah, yeah.
Relative to your income.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Fuck, I was like that... And that actually is like, was interesting because I'm like, you often look at them like, that's like an outrageous expense.
Mm-mm.
And then you're like, actually, no. Like, if I was thinking about it rationally, I would 100% do that as well.
Yeah. Well, like when I was talking to one of our clients who I train that's extremely wealthy, and he was explaining to me his, you know, he pays like a good amount of money and he's pays like $15,000 a year basically to train with me.
Mm.
And he was just saying, like, because we were talking about other clients like him that we have at the gym, and he's like, what you have to realize is, like, this amount of money for us, for what we're getting, for the return we're getting, to work with guys like you that are basically, like, the best in your industry, it's like, this is a small cost.
Yeah.
It's like, this is nothing. This is nothing. And I'm like, man, 15 grand a year in your health and fitness is crazy. But for people that have money, like, it is nothing.
Well, if they spend any less... they won't care at all.
Exactly.
Because for you, it's like spending...
it's the relative
whatever,
percentage,
like $800
right?
in your entire year. You're like, oh, I spent more on Netflix than I did on my health and fitness this year.
Yeah.
And it's similar for them. Unless they spend like a fortune on their health and fitness, like, you know, like the Gary Vee, like a trainer within 24/7
or
whatever.
It's like 100 grand a year or something.
Unless they spend like something like that, for them, they're like, oh, I spent, you know, three times as much on my wine this year as I did on my health and fitness.
Yeah.
So, they've just like...
it's a value. It's a value hierarchy.
Almost got no
right?
choice but to have these like crazy... spending habits.
Yeah.
So it was interesting. I think like the stuff about like the old billionaires compared to the new billionaires was really good.
Yeah.
The Russian billionaires, like hilarious, like they're all super evil. Like basically the summary of it.
Yeah.
It was really good.
It's not a good American Netflix documentary if we don't throw Russia under the bus at least a couple of times.
They throw them straight under the bus. They're like, oh yeah, all the ones in Russia, they're like the James Bond movies were 100% accurate.
Yeah.
With the evil Russian. So that was sick. And then we watched the animal intelligence one.
Yeah.
Basically, like, if you ever wondered, like, what was going on in the animal's head, this documentary will not tell you, but it'll give you some insights.
Well, it was just interesting to see how... because the whole idea is that you can learn, or we can learn more about ourselves and how our brain works from animals, right? Because they use the tree of evolution, right?
Yep.
You know, we all started as, like, whatever, the same thing, and then some slight genetic variation to this, and then you get the fork at the branches, right? And then on the next branch, you get... the next variation, like apparently our closest ancestor to the octopus was the worm, you know, and that was like 3 million years ago or something. So, you can just see, or maybe 300,000 years ago, whatever it was, but you can just see how it's like, okay, there was at one point we were both worms and then there was a slight gene that made us fork. And obviously, we didn't end up as a human. But
very,
we just,
very old worms, not like modern day worms, like worms that were around a long time ago.
Yeah. And then obviously from whatever forked there, something eventually led to the octopus and then something eventually led to the human, which is crazy.
Mm.
But it's super interesting because one of the main tests they were talking about through the whole thing was the mirror test, right?
Yeah.
It's being able to recognize yourself. That was the big thing that they were trying to get across. It was something to do with like a red dot.
So they basically put a red dot on you and like some animals can, and very young babies can't do it either. They look at it and they're like, oh, there's like some other animal on the other side with a red dot.
Yeah.
Whereas other animals look at it and they're like, oh, there's a red dot on my face. And they're like trying to get the red dot off and stuff because they recognize.
Right.
Even some guys have trouble with this. They look in the mirror, they think they're fat and they're actually jacked. So it's like still can be challenging for even guys in their 20s.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah. Even though I see a fucking praying mantis, stick insect, I'm like, what the fuck?
I see in Globo gyms lots of guys taking on the mirror test for hours.
No, I think that basically the best part of the whole animal series thing, it looks really interesting. There's lots of like different pieces of psychology in there. But the most interesting part for me was just like the what they got to in the end was like, okay, we cannot study animals with a human perspective. We have to think about intelligence in a completely different way. And that is seems like the next evolution in psychology. It's like, okay, we're running human tests to judge animal intelligence, but animals have their own separate intelligence from each one. A fish has a different intelligence to an ape, to an elephant. And it's like, okay, how can we imagine what intelligence is to a fish and now make a test credit to that to see how it would compare or how it would relate in some way to a test with human intelligence. And that I think that's where the real separator is. But look, at the end of the day, intelligence is, it's obviously contextual, right, for different animals. But we just have more tools as humans. Like we walk on two legs. We have thumbs, right? We have obviously brains that can... Then what we've established is they're not unique in terms of what we understand so far, in terms of how many neurons we have. It's not that. It's not the type of neurons necessarily. It's not that we can see into the future and imagine things because other animals can do that as well. But obviously, it seems to be the... And they didn't really go over this, but I was just thinking it's sort of like the combination of all these things, the synergy, is that what we put together with the tools that we have, they just put us, you know, into these... this, I don't know, superior being, if you want to put it that way, or this being that can like travel out of the atmosphere and shit and do crazy shit, build cities and all that crazy stuff, right? So it's just, it's not really like, I think that we're looking for like the one thing.
Yeah.
Like, what's the one thing that separates us? But it seems like it's just like the luck of the draw, the combination of all these things together that separate us. Or luck of the draw, right? Perfect synergy. We end up here talking on a microphone across the internet, right?
No chimp podcast educating people. Going on.
Yeah, exactly. And that's just kind of how it ended up being how it is. So
yeah, I mean, what you take away from it is, I guess, no one has any idea what it's actually like to be a cat.
Yeah,
you just don't know what it is. But I don't know if you remember if you read the Sapiens, the book.
Yeah,
yeah. I remember I thought it's like adds on to the show. But I thought the best thing in that was he was like, when you look at like chimps sitting around a campfire, they're like really similar to humans. They're like sitting around, they're kind of like chatting, they're like eating and like making fun of each other. It's like it is really similar. But the biggest difference is, I mean, outside of like Premier League games, when you put heaps of humans in one spot, they can generally like behave really well.
Right.
Like you can have like 100,000 people in a stadium.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah.
Behaving really, really well, like all doing the same thing, like laughing at the same time, like staying quiet when they're meant to stay quiet.
Right.
Whereas like that's the thing you can't do with animals. It's like if you get like 1,000 chimps, put them all in the same area, like he's like, it's fucking chaos. Like they're killing each other, like just going absolutely crazy.
Well, in the context of chimps, but you could put 1,000,000 wildebeests together, that'd be fine. You put 500.
Yeah, sorry, he was comparing chimps because they're the closest thing to
closest,
us.
Yeah.
And he's like, when you put them, like when you put 7 together, he's like, it's so similar to humans. Like hunter-gatherer humans and like chimps,
like 50,000.
Look at them, it's like so similar. Just the way they're interacting. Mm-hmm. But the biggest difference is the large numbers.
Yeah,
large numbers, we can organize ourselves like perfectly. Like a Chinese like military rally outside of Hong Kong is like running so smooth. but for chimps, it's like that shit never works.
Oh, fuck, that's good. All right, that's a good place to end it. So, look, with that explained series, it's like a 4 to 4.5 every week.
Man, they're like they're kind of like the podcast of Netflix at the moment.
Yeah. Well, Dash, one of the friends of the podcast who's in the similar sort of zone, he's trying to create something like that. But he's told me, in that field, in terms of, what's the field? I think they just call it like intellectuals, whatever. Like intellectual content.
Yeah.
They're the gold standard
Vox.
Right now.
Vox. It's Vox, right?
Yeah, Vox. Everyone's chasing them right now. They're the gold standard of putting that stuff together.
They make it so simple. Like, you need to know no background knowledge and you can really enjoy it.
That's why I love it. That's why I love it. And anytime you can combine entertainment and learning, like I guess what you guys are doing now listening to this, it's like the best combination. Like, that's what we love. All right, cool. So, before we let you guys go, now that we're holding you here captive, we mentioned Pilot, we mentioned Whoop. Both of them are in the description of this podcast if you're interested in trying them out. Highly recommend checking them both out. But also, True Protein, they're running a competition again. If you live in Australia, you can go into the draw, I think, just when you order, right?
It's the perfect thing if you live in Australia and you don't have a car. This is what you want.
And you want a car.
And you want a car.
Or even if you don't want a car and you want to make an $85,000 car and
sell it. Yeah, you want a better car.
They're doing the True Ford Ranger Ute giveaway again. And I'm pretty sure you get entry points when you buy stuff. Is
exactly,
that how it works?
Yeah, yeah. You get entry points when you buy stuff. So if you just go to like trueprotein.com.au/car, yeah, I don't know. There's an incredibly good chance you're going to win this $85,000
car. When does it expire?
I think you've got like a couple of weeks to get in on this. Yeah.
Yeah. So if you got a bit of time. If you order, you should order sooner rather than later, basically.
Yeah. One of the best ways, like if you're a gym owner or something like that, like put in like a wholesale order, you get like heaps and heaps of tickets. I think most gym owners were doing it. So that's one of the best ones. So 10 entries every time you place an order over $100.
Mm.
And you can like get bonus entries by like doing steps like sharing posts and stuff like that. But the car is sick.
Yeah.
It seems to be able to go on snow. Very impressive.
Nice. Lots of snow in Australia. Super useful.
But if it does, you'll be killed. No, Outback is like all over it.
Oh, it's good on sand?
Absolute beast.
If it's good on sand, then there's a lot of sand in Australia.
Exactly. So every $100, you will get an entry.
Nice.
The MMP code here, it actually doesn't help you because you get a discount and that takes away from your entries.
Unless you... Yeah, okay. Well, you want it in multiple lots of 100, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so just stay over that. And guys, remember as well, we have the Bench Booster program. If you want to increase your bench press and keep the program that you're on right now, but add it in, 2 20-minute sessions a week, super easy. I've actually going to, like I said, I did say I was going to send out discounted emails. We've been changing up some of the content behind the scenes, so we've got some really good stuff coming up. So all you have to do is go to mymuscleproject.com, scroll to the bottom, subscribe, or the website /newsletter, and subscribe, and you guys will still get that discount code coming up for the Bench Booster program if you're interested. So make sure you head there, subscribe to the newsletter. If you're already on it, good on you. The details will be coming out soon. All right, thanks for listening, guys. We'll speak to you next week.